Hello everyone and welcome to JFG tonight. We will talk about the news. A lot of things happening. Trump being swatted by the Fed. Olivia Newton-John dead at 73. That is too bad because Olivia Newton-John was something for the men of my generation. Although Grease was not a movie of my generation, it was a little older than me. My God, Olivia Newton-John was a desirable female. Her singing in Grease, and this was a time at which the movies were about heterosexual couples happening. I'm very nostalgic of this era. It's very different from what you had today. You had this picture of a hero, a male who wants to charm a female. You had this in Dirty Dancing. You had it in Grease. It was the basis of all movies. The heterosexuality then was penetrating culture. But Dino Legovic says, Olivia was my first love. She may have been the first love of pretty much everyone of a certain generation. You know, her singing alone, hopelessly devoted to you on the gallery of a house. It was so female. I have to take a break because I realize I have allergies. I'll be back in 10 seconds. I think it's better if I go take my medication now. All right, Tsigenam Sengis says, Grease was absolute gash, lol. What is gash, though? Is that positive or is that negative? Go Away says, I always get Olivia Newton-John and John Oliver mixed up. Yes, different people, but the word Oliver is involved in both. How are you doing, people of the regular chat? The big news. Breaking right now is that FBI executes search warrant at Trump's Mar-a-Lago. Former president says, oh my God, the leftists are going to be happy about this. The FBI executed a search warrant on Monday at Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago resort in Palm Beach, Florida. Trump declined to say why the FBI agents were at Mar-a-Lago, but the former president said the raid was unannounced and they even broke into my safe. My beautiful home, Mar-a-Lago in Palm Beach, Florida, is currently under siege, raided, and occupied by a large group of FBI agents. Trump was not in Florida at the time of the raid. The raid began early Monday morning and law enforcement personnel appeared to be focused on the area of the club where Trump's offices and personal quarters are. According to a person familiar with the matter, so we have no idea why that is. Nicholas Petris says, happy 4 years with Mama JF. Well, thank you. You've noticed that, yes, as Mama JF has pointed out on the show before, we have been together since August 8, 2018, and so it's been 4 years. I think that Mama JF may be sleeping right now because I didn't see her on the first floor before I started the show, so maybe she is sleeping. But what a great relationship it was, and what a great... It's a needed thing for someone like me who does the public stuff to have a solid, loyal female with me. And Mama JF has been delivering. She has been standing to the heights of our promises and our bilateral promises toward each other. It is absolutely great, and it's been a very productive relationship, so I have nothing but happiness about it. I didn't know as I was starting the show, but you are right, Nicholas Petris. The 8th of the 8th is when Mama JF, when I came to Mama JF's apartment in Montreal, and you know, I said to her, all right, I'm now available, I've been dropped by my current girlfriend, I am available. And Mama JF was just all ready for me. It's just how it happened. And then we were together for forever and since then. Dino Legovic says, typical man cannot remember anything. Well, I certainly will not remember dates, will not notice dates. I mean, I still have my mother call me on her birthday date every year to remind me that it's her birthday. It's not that I want to offend the people that I love, but I'm just a man who lives in a theoretical world away from this whole, like, human calendar thing. I live in a different universe. Go Away says, I've been raided by the police and it's not fun. Can't believe they would do this to a former president. Disgraceful. How is Go Away experiencing everything in the news? I mean, someone gets killed in the news, Go Away says, you know, I have someone I know who's been killed and it's not fun. Someone gets raided, Go Away has already been raided. It's unrealistic, Go Away. You have experienced too much. I don't believe you. DK Shadow says, congrats on 4 years. Yeah, for 4 years, I mean, it's pretty unbelievable what we've accomplished. I won't cover the details, but it's been productive. And, you know, in 4 years, I started from not having much to having a land, learning how to farm vegetables. Today I've been harvesting some garlic. I've been harvesting some onions, some beets. We have beet leaves for multiple recipes, beet stalks. We have the beets themselves. The garlic has not grown super big. And that's why I decided to put it out. It's because I realized that it was in too compacted soil, too much compacted, and that it wouldn't grow further, so I've decided to pull them out. And next year I will work on this part of the greenhouse. I wasn't able really to soften the soil. I will be working on building a better soil so that we can get bigger garlic. But it's still amazing that I started each of these garlic with a single clove, and they have become multiple cloves, garlics, as I harvest them today. So it's been a very productive relationship with Mama JF. Lodazal says, I've been murdered by police, no fun at all. All right, we can talk about the lawsuit by the Petito family, and I'm uncomfortable about this lawsuit happening. I think it's an unfair lawsuit. They might be able to win, but I think it's totally unfair. And here's why. There's a problem with having a lawsuit in the name of someone who died, and basically your argument is the police was too lenient on Gabby Petito. It's not explicitly their argument, but underlying this, the argument that they're doing, they're basically saying the police didn't take seriously the signs. But the problem is, if the police had taken seriously the sign, they would have put Gabby Petito in jail. Because this lawsuit all revolves around the police being neglectful in Utah when they stopped this couple, talked to them on the side of the road, and concluded correctly, in my view, that Gabby Petito was the primary aggressor in the relationship. And what they've decided then to do is to ask Brian Laundrie, do you want us to arrest her? Or are you comfortable? Do you want her to be in trouble? Or do you prefer we just leave you guys because we see you're a man, you should be able to handle her aggression, it's not going to be so terrible. So what do you want? And basically, they have been lenient toward Gabby Petito because they haven't arrested her. And I've pointed on this show that had they arrested her, if the law applied to women in America, she might have been saved. But not because it was neglectful for them to not arrest her. It wasn't neglectful. If anything, it was neglectful of Brian Laundrie, toward Brian Laundrie. It was generous of them not to arrest her. And the big problem is here, basically, the police service is getting sued for being too generous by the parents of Gabby Petito. They're being sued because they haven't arrested her. Now, it's true that if they had arrested her, it would have stopped her murder, but she would be in jail. Because if the law applied to women in America, she has committed probably some felony assault. I mean, if you attack someone with a weapon, and in this case, the weapon was a cell phone, I think she might have gotten a felony arrest of some kind, physical aggression, unconsensual, an injury-inducing attack onto the head of Brian Laundrie. Because here's the problem. When the police arrest the two, they have a couple of evidence from phone calls saying, one phone call to 911 is saying someone saw Brian Laundrie hitting her. One phone call says someone saw her hitting Brian Laundrie. And they have also the physical evidence that Brian Laundrie's head is the one with an injury. He has an injury, and he says to them, "Yes, she hit me with her with a cell phone. I don't know if it was hers or his. I think it was hers. So she's hit him with a cell phone. He's the only one with marks. She has also pulled the wheel drive, which led him to drive in a bizarre manner, which triggered the policeman's attention. Now, this is starting to be a lot on her case, enough to find that the victim of abuse in this couple was Brian Laundrie. Now, that doesn't change that apparently Brian Laundrie, despite his journal confession that he was basically merciful in killing her. That's a separate story, but it doesn't deny that the murder happened. The murder happened, but Brian Laundrie was being the victim of physical abuse by Gabby Petito. Now, the lawsuit of the parents has the defect of not mentioning this at all, and in a way, I find it extremely unrealistic. Because all that's mentioned in this lawsuit is that Brian Laundrie was the true primary aggressor. And the basis for this would be that the call to the 911 was mentioning that it was him hitting her. However, the problem is, as the police investigated this case, they have concluded that any hit that came from Brian Laundrie was a self-defense hit. It was just him pushing her back as she was aggressing him. So the fact that the 911 caller said he hit her, the police eventually got to clarify that any hit that came from him was just pushing back to avoid conflict. 5 seconds, I'll be back. All right, I'm getting allergies today, so I have to clear my nose if I want to continue speaking correctly. So the police has properly identified Gabby Petito as the primary aggressor. Now, this may not be the finding that the parents like, but is it neglectful? They would have to make a case in court that there was some massive negligence happening here, but the police have followed a rational process. That's the problem. Maybe a jury will be moved to find them guilty of something. I would hope that that won't be the case. I find this lawsuit ridiculous. We have to stop demanding too much of the police because at this point, the police was generous to your daughter. They were generous to your daughter because your daughter committed a physical assault with a weapon that caused an injury. This is what the parents of Gabby Petito have to understand. Now, once you understand this, you would understand that she belongs in jail. She doesn't belong dead, but she belongs in jail. The police have just been deciding to apply their discretion here, because they were right in front of the victim, Brian Laundrie, and he was giving assurance that it's not what he wanted. He didn't want her in jail. Go away, says JF. First, the Sandy Hook parents, and now Gabby Petito parents. What are we going to do about the grieving parents question? That's an important question. Because it is problematic how it's becoming a trend in America that parents who see their child dead, they try to seek vengeance on third parties who haven't committed the murder, but they go at them just as much as they would if they had. That is very sad. It's what's happening in America, and it leads to people being too much on walking on eggs, you know. I wouldn't be surprised that police services across the US are following this case and they will become extremely paranoid about leaving any male and female together if there's any sort of report that maybe there's abuse. And it leads to a paranoid police, the fact that these lawsuits are let to happen. DK Shadow says police sexism actually might have caused her death. How ironic if they only arrested her. Yeah, that's what I was underlining when it happened back then. I was like, yeah, in this case, the generosity toward females by police has led to a death, but it's certainly not a neglectful death. It's that. Yeah, some people are so stupid that they need to be protected from themselves, and they are so anger-inducing that they would be better protected in jail than out there in national parks pissing off a yoga granola vegan, who Brian Laundrie apparently was. I'll be back in 5 seconds. All right, so what are the arguments in the lawsuit? Well, it's a very one-sided lawsuit. They say that they claim that there was an injury on Gabby Petito that wasn't spotted properly by the police. Officer Robbins also saw cuts on Gabby's cheek and arm. Gabby demonstrated how Brian had violently grabbed her face during their altercation and explained that Brian gets frustrated with me a lot. Indeed, the cut to Gabby's face was much more serious than may have been apparent in the body cam footage. Another photo taken at the time, which has not yet been released publicly, shows a close-up view of Gabby's face where blood is smeared on her cheek and left eye. So again, you have to understand the context. This is very one-sided. You would believe, if you read this, you might believe that there is a ground for a lawsuit here, but that is a very exaggerated narrative. The fact is that the police was aware that Brian Laundrie had some contact with his hand toward Gabby Petito, but it's the context in which he was having that contact. Brian Laundrie was explaining that he was trying to get her away from him. Now, when you have crazy octopus females running at you and imposing their presence close to your personal bubble, a simple defensive move can lead to bleeding on the female. And the police understood this. They understood that, okay, well, if she's going at you and she's hitting you with a phone, simply a defensive move will leave marks on her arms, might leave marks on her face. But it's still a defensive move. So there's still nothing they could have done toward Brian Laundrie here. Thomas O'Ward says, just got here. Feels like it's been forever. The JF already covered a huge breaking news about the FBI raiding Trump's Mar-a-Lago home. Yes, I covered it. But there, we don't know anything about what's this for. I'm sure this is related ultimately to the news 24 hours ago that the Trump lawyers were in discussion with the feds. They were probably trying to negotiate something related to this SWAT. But yeah, we don't know exactly why they SWATed Trump. It must be related to January 6th, that kind of stuff. But but I don't know. Go away says, females bleed way too easily. It's caused me serious trouble in the past. Go away. Every aspect of the news, go away, relives it. Cornex says, only when perp is white, when assailants are black, parents go out of their way to say how not racist they are. Look at Ethan Liming's murder. I would have to research this. I don't know. So anyways, they go on to affirm that basically the police has been neglectful in assessing that Brian Laundrie was the victim, and they should have concluded that Gabby Petito was the victim. It's going to be a very hard argument to make that there is something that was violated in terms of the standards of police work here. But they will try to make it, and they are asking for $50 million from the police service of the city of Mob, Utah. $50 million, that is three times less than was asked to Alex Jones. We have to have a legal system that excludes that kind of claims, simply because it's not because there is a chain of causation to the death of your child that that person is liable in a civil lawsuit. Yes, there is a chain of causation between the police action and the death of Gabby Petito. The causation goes as follows. Gabby Petito was a physical aggressor who was hurting Brian Laundrie. Gabby Petito, therefore, should have been put in jail. The police decided to be generous with Gabby Petito. That generosity should not be turned against them today. And we should not be like, okay, well, you were generous at the wrong time here. You should have known that Gabby Petito was about to be murdered. The problem is that there is no reasonable path by which police should have interpreted this particular prediction, that they should have been able to make that prediction. They must be seeing victims of domestic conflicts, bilateral domestic conflicts, on an everyday basis. And there's no way you can say, all right, these people are highly likely to kill each other or something like that. And still, as of today, I'm not fully certain of the circumstances in which Gabby Petito died. I don't understand the Brian Laundry journal confession. There's something bizarre about it, but I don't think that it's as much a lie as the media wants to pass it as. In other words, I think that there's something that Brian Laundry is hiding. But I don't think he's hiding that he is just an evil murderer who randomly killed her. I don't think that's what he's hiding. I think there's two things that he may be hiding. He may be hiding that Gabby Petito has attempted to commit suicide and has missed her shot. And the reason he would be hiding this is perhaps he wanted to leave a positive impression of Gabby Petito. Perhaps he was taken by the whole perfect image of her and he didn't want to stain it with an accusation of suicide. But it's possible to me that Gabby Petito threw herself down a cliff and had minimal injury, had some kind of injury, but not injuries that led to her death, but injuries that may have led to her head trauma. And perhaps this is the circumstance in which Brian Laundry, being annoyed by all of this and trying to save her and being confused about her neurological symptoms, would have said, all right, she seems to be cold, I will kill her. She seems to be headed for death anyway, I will ease it for her. That's one possibility. The other possibility is that Brian Laundry was pushed by the continued abuse of this woman, and he was pushed above his limit, and he went insane and just killed her because he couldn't take the arguments and the hitting anymore. Go Away says, perhaps he felt guilty for her suicide. Not uncommon when a partner kills themselves. Yeah, that's very possible. It's possible that he felt like he caused that suicide. All of this is possible. But I'm really not buying, and this is exactly what they present in this lawsuit. They're presenting a theory of just Brian Laundry brutally killed Gabby Petito for no reason at all. I don't think that's the case. I think there are still mysteries to me. I think it's extremely sad that Brian Laundry made up this crazy story in his journal, in his personal journal, because I think he could have eliminated the situation, but he didn't. Instead, he kind of told a story that no one can believe. Like, oh, she was cold. She was cold and I strangled her. What? How does that work? I mean, we've been playing it out here on the show. People have discussed maybe we could have a Brian Laundry service, you know, a kind of euthanasia service going around the US for people who want to die, who suffer too much. But yeah, the story doesn't add up, but certainly the lawsuit to me is unjustified, and I hope that it fails or that a jury finds that the police has committed no wrong here. They have not committed, at best they may have, you could argue at best that they just made the wrong call. But that's not neglectful necessarily. For neglect, for something to rise to the level of neglect in a civil lawsuit, there must be a breach of some kind of police standard. There are no police standards that order you to to attribute the victim status to the female, even when obviously the physical injuries are on the head of the male. Go away, no, this one I read. All right, so let's get started on the other news. Olivia Newton-John dead at 73. Grease star Olivia Newton-John battled breast cancer for 30 years. Wow, 30 years of breast cancer. The technology and I guess the medical support is getting very good around these, and you can more and more live a full life despite having these cancers. We ask that everyone please respect the family's privacy during this very difficult time. Olivia has been a symbol of triumph and hope for over 30 years, sharing her journey with breast cancer. I didn't know she was Australian. I didn't know this. Very interesting. In any case, Olivia Newton-John, a beautiful female back in the 70s who has inspired the dreams of all the males of the nation. A Post-Racial World, The Last White Man by Mohsen Hamid. It's like people are pointing out on Gab that, you know, this is totally mask off. Okay, this is what you guys want, isn't it? You want the abolition of whiteness. This is like the explicit laying out of it in this title. So as it turns out, this is a whole book called The Last White Man. And it's absolutely annoying. It's a book in which white men, you know, are insecure and they really like their whiteness, but suddenly something happens in nature and they all turn brown. And so they're like, oh shit, I'm turning brown. And at the beginning, it's a shocking experience, and there are people who are pissed off, and there's a bunch of remaining white people who are patrolling the streets because they're like, who's doing this? Who's turning us brown? But eventually, after a little bit of conflict and after everyone turns brown, suddenly it reaches a kind of utopia. And suddenly the world becomes peaceful and loving. And this was inspired by some guy who's a Muslim, I think, who's a Middle Eastern man. And in the aftermath of 9/11, suddenly he passed from being just a regular guy in the eyes of people, being kind of white, to being seen as a Muslim and seen as a potential terrorist because of the 9/11 event. Look. It's a total delusion to think of a utopic world rising once everyone turns brown. What happens once everyone turns brown will be exactly what happens in countries where everyone has already turned brown. And so you can seek inspiration if you want to know what America would look like if everyone turned brown. You can take a look at India, you can take a look at sub-Saharan Africa, and depending on the level of brownness, you will get the models of society that are likely to emerge from such an event. So it's a total fantasy, this book. But the fact that it's a fantasy, the fact that they can brag about it, is what's disgusting. Because no one could stay on the public space, you know, let's convert everyone to whiteness. Let's make a post-brown world. No one would be able to say this. They would be censored. They would be hated. But that's what they're saying. They're saying the reverse. They're saying a post-white world. And they're imagining this as some kind of utopia. Well, you know, make it happen. Make it happen in whatever locality I will just live away from you guys, make it happen, your brown utopia, and live with the consequences and enjoy. Go Away says, is it a good idea to edge your bets and have kids of multiple races? That way your genes will be safe regardless of how the future shakes out. Well, that is a fallacy. Because you don't know that mixed race kids will be particularly successful in societies of the future. They may not. They may not. I'll be back in 5 seconds. So the thing is, if as you say, it's hedging your bet, if you're thinking of it as hedging your bet, the problem is you're not hedging your bet at all. One way to hedge your bet is to consider the fact that perhaps in the future there would only be racial preferences for dating, and black people will largely want to date black people, and white people will largely want to date white people. If it's a world like this, then your mixed race children will have more difficulty. So I don't think it's a very good idea. I think that again and again, the demonstration of history is that the most productive baby making model that can apply to a large segment of society is monogamy and producing 10 babies in a row with the same female. Because we've seen this again and again, families of 10, 12. And it's a model that is reproducible across society in the sense that, sure, you could think, well, what if you're a male and what if you're Genghis Khan? And what if you inseminate 400 females? Well, on this, I will say that's not realizable for all of society. That's one alpha getting all the reproductive power and then the other gets zero. Secondly, you won't have time to invest parental care over 400 babies. So the best solution to me is don't hedge your bet. Your best bet is many children with the same woman. Ariel Suarez says, you seem to need 5 seconds break too often, JF. Everything all right, buddy? Everything is all right, but I'm suffering from allergies. I have to sneeze. Sometimes I have to take pills or put stuff in my nose, or else I will be unable to speak for the show. CBS censors own documentary after Ukraine outrage. 30% of U.S. weapons gone missing. CBS has censored its own documentary investigative reporting after an avalanche of pushback from supporters of Ukraine and its military. The segment highlighted that tons of weaponry shipped from the U.S. to the country's military has gone missing and sounded the alarm as billions in dollars more have been pledged by the Biden administration. This is the state of journalism today. Not only will they lie about you when they write hit pieces about you, they also will hide the truth when they discover it accidentally. It's like CBS accidentally discovered the truth. They didn't want to discover it. They were like, oh, let's do some truth journalism here. All right, there's a lot of that weaponry that's going elsewhere. I don't know where. And the partisans of the Ukraine side have gone after them, and they were terrified. They say, we removed a tweet promoting our recent doc, Arming Ukraine, which quoted the founder of the nonprofit Blue Yellow, Jonas Oman's assessment in late April, that only around 30% of aid was reaching the front lines in Ukraine. yes, so Someone was pointing out on the regular chat, maybe the Zero Hedge article has gotten it wrong. Because that's not 30% of US weapons missing. That's 30% of US weapons making it to the front line. So Zero Hedge has poorly titled their article. But yeah, so that would mean there's only 30% accounted for according to this guy. That's an important fact to be talked about, and it is the job of journalists to maintain these facts in the public space. If they get intimidated by partisan Twitterates, then we lose access to the truth. Raining taxpayer money, Ukraine gets 1 billion more in arms plus 4.5 billion for budget needs. At this point, let's be clear, Ukraine doesn't exist anymore. It's an outpost of the US Congress. It's a foreign outpost where US law doesn't apply, where all possible dirty tricks can be pulled, and where money flow is infinite. That is the current state of affairs in Ukraine. Murders in Albuquerque, Muslim community. New Mexico officials offering $20,000 reward for info leading to killer. There's apparently a serial killer that's going around just killing Muslims of a specific South Asian descent. You know, South Asian... It's hard to know what it means. Does it mean sometime Indian? Does it mean sometime Middle East? Probably a mix of all this. He has been murdering four different Muslims of South Asian descent. When you look at the fact that they are limiting the information, but they are doing it with some sense of urgency, and do believe that it is a specific group, meaning Muslims, that are being targeted, they feel that there is a sense of urgency because this person could very well strike again and strike again soon. So, what a weird situation. It seems that we have a killer going around and doing so based on people's identity. My awesome channel says, I don't believe anything the FBI tells us about the Gabby Petito story. Zero trust in them. I think the documents they found in a swamp were fake. That's possible. They are very bizarre. They are certainly bizarre. There's something needs explaining in the whole Brian Laundry personal journal. There something is bizarre about this book. My first hypothesis wouldn't be that it's a fake, but my first hypothesis would be Brian Laundry here is trying to hide something. Go away, says JF. Do you think it's possible that the Trump raid is related to the January 6th committee receiving Alex Jones' phone data from the plaintiffs in the Sandy Hook case? Perhaps there is evidence that Jones and Trump were colluding. Timing seems suspicious. I mean, it's certainly related to the January 6th committee. It's possible that this is it. So Alex Jones, you know, in the lawsuit, they got these 2 years of phone data that they say that the lawyers of Alex Jones have sent by accident to the lawyers of the plaintiffs, and the lawyers of the plaintiff have gotten this information to the January 6th committee. That is very political, but that is lawyers in this domain of like pursuing right-wing personalities. They are always in the pockets of the Democrat, and although they are supposed to just represent their client, they will not hesitate to do a political move of that kind. And so, yes, it's totally possible that somehow there was a message between Trump and Alex Jones. And the January 6th committee is focusing on this and trying to leverage this to justify a swatting of Trump. I don't, we'll have to, you know, the thing is, the standards must be so low that only a sign that Trump called Alex Jones on that day would be enough for them to justify, because the standards are so low for suspicion to get a SWAT warrant in the US that just a log that would indicate a call has happened would be enough for these paranoid January 6th committee people to justify the SWAT request. There was Roger Waters in an interview on CNN. And CNN tried pushing him hard on the fact that he's presenting Joe Biden as a war criminal. And I didn't know this about Roger Waters. I may have seen some of his political opinions back many years ago, but I didn't know he was that based. Roger Waters doesn't like Joe Biden. Roger Waters, co-founder of Pink Floyd, says to CNN, right to their face, you know, you guys suck in how you cover the Ukraine stuff. He actually thinks that Russia has a legitimate claim toward the Ukraine, and that he finds the expansion of NATO very provocative toward Russia. He actually thinks that China has a legitimate claim to Taiwan, and he was like, he was saying to the CNN journalist, "You don't know your history if you don't think that. If you think that Taiwan is a free nation, you don't know your history." I mean, I was like very surprised that Roger Waters is able to challenge leftist and pro-warmongering CIA type discourse. I didn't know that about him. Absolutely fantastic. The interview is worth watching. Russia strikes U.S.-backed fighters in Syria near American base. John Drake says, Rogers is based. Howard Stern hates this guy because he calls out Israel's crimes. Ah, so he's totally disaligned with the Israeli intelligence community. Let's call it that way. Russia strikes U.S.-backed fighters in Syria near American base. So it seems that this was a bunch of fighters. They were supported by the U.S. and now Russia is going strong against them in Syria. I don't know if it means anything. It may mean that Russia is assuming a more dominant role. That it's not afraid anymore. It has faced the proxy warriors of the U.S. in Ukraine, and now it cares less about facing them elsewhere. That's great. It shows confidence on the side of Russia. So that is good. And a last news item, because I will have to cut the show relatively short simply because my allergies are hitting so hard today that even with the pills, I am still having difficulty maintaining a rhythm on the show. But we've had 50 minutes, that's not so bad. U.S. shale DeFi calls to boost output as they funnel profits to shareholders. That was funny because there's this kind of chief executive of a fuel producer company. And he's saying, you know, back in the days we were growing, we were trying to grow our sales. And our investors liked it because we were growing as a company. At this point, we're cashing in. We are selling maybe a stable amount of fuel or even less fuel. but we're selling it at a higher price. We're taking the money and we're paying dividends to our shareholders. And he was saying, unless we have shareholders that come in and say, look, we do not like these big dividends. We do not like your share repurchase program. We want you to go back to a growth model. Until we see that, I see no reason to change our strategy. So the fuel business is cashing in with the increased price and the shareholders like it. So there's no reason for them to wish a lower fuel price and to keep growing and competing and competing. They're super happy making the money and paying their dividends to the shareholders. So that indicates that we are in a tough predicament. We are being exploited for our dependence to fuel, and the companies have no interest at all in us getting lower prices. Nicholas Petris says, Roger Waters says he's more important than Drake and The Weeknd. Certainly he is. Very interesting take. All right, guys, I have to go. Bye-bye. Much love. Thank you.